Blog Talk Radio.
And by the way, whatever happened.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Getting nervous. From the debacle of Deflategate to the increasing avalanche of immigrants and coming across the border and broadcasting from a small, square, wooden, canopied Mesilla Valley Golf Shack. Kelly O'Connell, good morning to you. It is 6:06 on the 8th, May the 8th, 2015. Pretty sweet out there right now. And so we've got a few stories that I had been mentioning, but there is a big story right now that is kind of a big deal in the sports world, which you've already heard about, which is Inflategate, which I couldn't help but notice that Tom Brady is in a lot of trouble, at least, you know, for the short time. His reputation, nobody knows what the future holds in terms of what fines that he might get or sanctions, but he goes without saying that something has got to happen. So what do you think should happen? Some people are calling for even up to a year of him staying out of football. What do you think about that? He's lost a year with his knee, and, you know, if he was to lose another year, that would be devastating for him, although it wouldn't touch his, obviously it would not touch his achievements in terms of on the field, but this is going to color what people think about him as an athlete. So there's no doubt that he's got to be a little bit worried about it. The outrage has been a little bit more. Now, there's something that kind of funny that happened when they were interviewing Bill Belichick, or he was doing his news conference, and they asked him about it, and his reply was that you would be better off to ask Tom Brady what he thought, because he was the one who knew more about it. So I don't know. It's one of those things that you can't. So some of the stuff you can't make up. I'm kind of laughing at this idea that Tom Brady is still digesting the Deflategate report. I mean, what is it? Chicken sandwich. But so I think that there's got to be obviously some level of punishment, or people are going to say that there's no teeth in the NFL. And there's no, you know, teeth in the sanctions, and people can do whatever they want. So I think, you know, what would have been better is for them to have, you know, to have punished him at the time being, but that time has passed, so he's got the championship under his belt. Now he's supposed to be the greatest ever. Here's a little bit from CNN. So there's this report that's out. It's 250 pages at least. All right, so what this little video is going over is the fact that Tom Brady knew about this. Now, how do we know that he knew? Well, we've got is texts between his equipment guys and Tom Brady, some of which are pretty hilarious, flattering to Tom. And so if you go on to, it's linked out of one of these, the CBS or whatever, an investigative report concerning footballs used during the AFC Championship game on January 18th, 2015, by Paul Weiss, Rifkind, Wharton, and Garrison LLP, and table of contents, and it's 243 pages, and it is absolutely side-splitting some of the text that they picked up. So here is another little clip on this from CNN, yet another clip. Tom Brady says he's still digesting Deflategate. He might want a little Pepto-Bismol with his digestion. The game that he was using the deflated ball in was against Indianapolis, and they were just getting creamed anyway. But you have to assume that basically he's done it before. I'm sure he probably won't do it again, but that's not really the issue. He's done it before. It's got to be a tainted championship. Here's another clip. CBS Sports here. But here is, I'm trying to find one of these little text. I'll find the text thing when we come back and read a couple of them to you. But I guess there's no doubt that he's going to get spanked. Here's from the conclusion of the report. For the reasons described in this report and after a comprehensive investigation, we have concluded that in connection with the AFC Championship game, it is more probable than not that the New England Patriots personnel participated in violation of the playing rules and were involved in a deliberate effort to circumvent the rules. Parties presumed responsible include, it is more probable than not that Jim McNally, the official locker room attendant for the Patriots, and John Jastrzemski, an equipment assistant for the Patriots, participated in a deliberate effort to release air from the Patriots game balls after the balls were examined by the referee. Based on the evidence, it is also, in our view, that it is more probable than not that Tom Brady, the quarterback of the Patriots, was at least generally aware of the inappropriate activities of McNally and Jastrzemski involving release of the air from the Patriot balls, game balls. Some of the evidence includes in the weeks and months before the AFC Championship game, McNally periodically exchanged text messages with the Patriots equipment assistant, primarily responsible for the preparation of the Patriots game balls, John Jastrzemski. In a number of these text messages, McNally and Jastrzemski discussed the air pressure of Patriots game balls, Tom Brady's unhappiness with the inflation level of Patriot game balls, Jastrzemski's plans to provide McNally with a needle, quote, a needle, for use by McNally, and McNally's request for, quote, cash and sneakers, together with, quote, the needle to be provided by Jastrzemski. A sports ball inflation needle is a device that can be used to inflate a football if attached to an air pump or release air from a football if inserted into the ball. So that is all of the evidence, and, you know, Tom Brady would not release he refused to release his own text, but he didn't need to. Okay. So that's what happened. You might be disappointed. I am not going to read the 248-page report, by the way. But if you want to read it and call in and give us commentary, by all means. And let us take a little break here. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and we will be right back. All right, so let me give you some of the headlines here. Okay, so there was an election in the UK, and the Conservative Party came out on top, and the Labour Party, which is their Democrats, they suffered, and they think that they're going to get. Some of these liberal leaders over there are going to be removed, and they're going to have to find somebody else. So that was big news. So they're conservative in England just a little bit. They're not conservative like they were when Maggie Thatcher, when Maggie was at the helm. All right, so. The FBI is saying that thousands are under the influence of ISIS inside of America and that we need to be aware of this. And so if that's true, then we've got to carefully scrutinize these type of, things that we do, like this thing outside of Dallas where there was the cartoon. The lady was doing the cartoon contest, and there was a reaction from people sympathetic to ISIS. And so that is, that's undoubtedly true. The question is how many different people. They said that there were, I think, 71 people that were ready to go around and start shooting. And there's probably more than that, to be honest, but that's what ISIS was claiming. There is some concern now with what is going on the border, because there's a sudden surge on the border, and or as it's warming up, as it's getting nicer outside, we've got more people getting caught, but more people getting across as well, just like last year. And it hasn't really stopped, but because the basic pattern is still holding there with these people coming from Mexico and Southern Central America. You know, it was interesting, though. I read the other day that the number one place where people are coming from in America, the number one place sending us immigrants, is not Mexico. It's not Central America. It is China. I was surprised to read that. I had no idea. And Los Angeles Police Department officer and girlfriend were indicted in federal court for trying to smuggle Mexican citizens into the United States. And this has happened out of San Diego. And they were indicted last Wednesday. And Officer Carlos Curiel Quazida Jr., 34, girlfriend Angelica Godness, 31, both of L.A., were indicted Wednesday in the Fed court on one count of bringing in illegal aliens without presentation. And so the question this brings up, of course, is how many people in the U.S. government or that are working for the state are involved in this smuggling? So you've got to figure that's not it's obviously probably a fair number across the border one way or the other. Now, from the Guardian, the UK Guardian, you've got a story. U.S.-Mexico border braces for summer migrant surge as children risks risk lives alone. So we've got another round, another wave of these kids that are going to be coming in so that they can be picked up by the government and taken to camps and then integrated into communities across the United States. And 523-1450, it is something that we're going to have to get used to in the next couple of years. But they say that the really big thing is that there's going to also be a lot of Muslims, or there is a wave of Muslims that's also become permanent. And it's got some people really unnerved, obviously, something that a lot of individuals are going to say is totally unacceptable in the face of the fact that we've got these attacks going on in America, people that are trying to attack, and then other people that are being successful. So here's a question for you, 523-1450. Should we block, at least temporarily, people coming in from the Middle East? Now, that might sound like an outrageous idea, but I will guarantee you that there's going to be some conversation in these political campaigns from the Republican side over whether we should do that. And I think more realistically, what people are going to want is for there to be a lessening of the number of Muslims that come in here, or people from Muslim countries, Muslim background, Middle Eastern background. There's going to be a demand that we cut back and also look into the number of people coming in and what they believe, doing a background check on these people, finding out what it is that, what kind of Islam are they? Are they atheists? Are they agnostics? Are they believers? Are they Sunni? Are they Shia? Are they from a radical area, a radical family? And the question is also out there is, if we're in the middle of a war in the Middle East, or at least a series of skirmishes, we're fighting against ISIS, or at least in theory we're supposed to be, and we're at the same time ramping up immigration from these areas, and nobody's really, nobody's standing up against it from the GOP side. It's this administration is doing it, but what is the purpose? Anybody who is on the right, who's on the far right, is going to say the purpose is to destroy America. But from the left, what is their purpose? They're making the country more multicultural. I mean, it's, you're bringing in people from Central America, from Mexico, Central America. You're bringing in a lot of people from China. You're bringing in people from the Middle East. Is it just a transparent attempt to convert America through mass immigration? Because assuming that people who come here are going to want to, or going to feel the need to be in the Democrat Party, is it that simple? Is there something more sinister going on? I've got a little clip here from this gentleman, Geert Wilder, would like to school Obama on radical Islam. better to die on your feet than live on your knees. I'm sure that gentleman would tell you. So anyway, we've got concern ourselves with what these people believe that we're bringing into the country. But, you know, the people that want to come into the country, whether they're on a training camp on the border or not, you can bet that ISIS wishes that they had sleeper cells here, whether they have a bunch or not. There are certainly at least people here that are sympathetic to Islam that are willing to strike out with the right provocation. We've seen these two gentlemen in Arizona that did that. But there is immigration issues on different various fronts now. What is going to happen when Obama is out of office, when his administration, is it going to be another far-left administration? Hillary Clinton has said that if she gets elected, she's going to bring in equally, if not more, radical immigration policies. And maybe from her perspective, she just wants to get elected, and so she's got to double down to attract the kind of people that she wants to support her, which is her own party. It is possible that she feels like she needs to or is stuck. I mean, maybe, for all I know, she feels like that she needs to do it or would want to do it anyway, but she might feel politically that she doesn't have a choice but to do this right now. The party has gone to the left. For Hillary Clinton to fight for the nomination, she's got to try to fend off a little bit the Elizabeth Warrens of the party, which are part of the left too. And to come back to the center would seem to be a repudiation of this administration, of Obama's ideas and stuff. So she may not feel like she's got a choice. It seems inevitable that she's going to get the Democratic nomination. So I guess the question now is who's going to be there on the right to deal with this. Okay, we're going to take a little break here for news, and we will be right back. It's 523-1450 to call in. AM Las Cruces is the show, 1450. KOBE is the place and the station. I'm Kelly O'Connell. It is 6:30 on the button. We'll be right back. And Kelly here, and by the way, it's open mic. If you have an open mic for everybody except Mike, of course, 523-1450, but an open mic, open topic, basically, anything that you want to discuss. I did have a couple of things on mind today that I wanted to get to later, one of which was the story about this Shalem colony that I was kind of investigating after I was directed there by Rob, and I've got a little bit of information on that for you. And also, I've been studying some stuff on the universe, which I thought was kind of remarkable, and wanted to pass on to you. And if you don't study, this stuff, if you don't get into the size of the universe and such, you may not have heard some of it, but it is kind of remarkable what we've discovered in the last 100 years since this guy Hubble, who was an attorney, actually, in California, and I think it was the Mount Wilson Observatory that he helped to turn that into the world center for the study of the universe. So in terms of local state news, we've got an agreement that is being put together to supply coal for New Mexico power plant. And this is from newsok.com. The owners of a power plant supplying more than 2 million customers throughout the Southwest reached an agreement that will ensure it has coal through 2022. Now, don't forget that there was a promise that was made from this administration about coal, that coal was going to be bankrupted out of business. And so there were a lot of states that were struggling to kind of comply with the new regulations. And one of the states that has gotten rid of, as I believe from what I've under, you know, from what I've studied, they've gotten rid of all of their coal plants, I believe, is California. We're going to keep coal. The Public Service Company of New Mexico and mining company BHP Billiton made the announcement last Friday, saying that they've got the paperwork to outline an agreement as well as the details about future ownership of the plant. Current coal contract for the San Juan Generation Station expires in 2017, and so that had brought in some a sense of not knowing what was going on. But now they've got that agreement together. So, you know, there was actually a movement that was inspired by McConnell, who was putting out, you know, he's from Kentucky. He's the leader of the Senate. He used his influence and authority and put out a blueprint for to be used by any state that wanted to fight back against the federal government taking away through bureaucratic rules, taking away the right for these states to be able to procure coal and keep the prices of energy down. So it's good to know that, you know, coal has been very, very important in across the United States and especially in New Mexico, that we're going to continue to have it. Okay, so twins with different fathers. Believe it or not, from New Jersey, a judge there in New Jersey found that there were kids that came out of the womb at the same time, but they have different fathers. The woman in the case was going to get child support. A DNA case revealed that one gentleman was the father of one child, but almost certainly not the father of the other child. It's very unusual, but it does happen occasionally. So it's almost a miracle. Locally, we've got a story of what they're calling a bizarre wreck that happened over on El Paseo. And the driver was left critically injured. And this was just last night. Las Cruces police investigating a single vehicle crash in El Paseo. About 3 p.m. Thursday, police responded to a crash on South El Paseo near University. When they arrived, they found a 21-year-old man on the ground, unresponsive, with head injuries. Okay, they airlifted him to El Paso. What they say happened is he was driving along in a 1994 Pontiac Grand Prix, southbound on El Paseo, going towards University, when all of a sudden the vehicle veered sharply to the left across oncoming traffic and crashed into a city light pole. The doors popped open, and he went through the passenger side door. Then the vehicle went into reverse and crossed all four lanes of traffic again and struck a rock wall on the east side of El Paseo Road. Investigators, not surprisingly, believe that this gentleman may have been under the influence. All right, so take a little break here. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. All right, so, folks, I have a few of these stories for you about this Shalem colony and some other stuff. I'm going to get into that a little bit later. Now, there is an issue that came up that I had mentioned to you before that was brought up by a couple of people, one of which is James Dobson. James Dobson is this very famous and influential guy. He started Focus on the Family. He's the guy who came up with, if I'm not mistaken, a book of his written on tough love. And he's been very influential in the psychological community. He's a psychiatrist. He's from Los Angeles. He's got a medical doctor, and he's also did work in psychiatry there. He's a Christian, and he brought in a lot of, he wrote books and started organizations, Focus on the Family. And now he's doing something else. I think he was pushed out at the Focus on the Family. But he's been very influential in Christian and thinking, and also thinking on the right. Now, he's saying, in his opinion, that this gay marriage debate is to the point where it's put to, basically to the test, the entire Western, the West, the foundation of the West. I've got a little clip from him here right now. He's claiming that, and I wanted to get your opinion if you think it's overkill or if you would agree with it, that this gay marriage thing is, if it's ratified by the Supreme Court, if it goes across the United States, that it's the death of the West is what he's saying. So check this out. All right. Do you consider that to be overkill? Do you think gay marriage is just another one of these issues that is no big deal? We'll just adapt to it. A society is always evolving. It's an area that we'll evolve into and we'll adapt to it. Or do you believe that Dr. Dobson is accurate? Now, he's written something in WND. The WND.com site, going over basically what he just said, which was it was comparable to Roe v. Wade. And but he's declaring that the fall of Western civilization is at hand. Now, I believe that he is saying that because he's suggesting that if we go fully into this law of gay marriage, that it will take away the church's rights to oppose it publicly. And not only that, the public policy of the United States, the public education and all these things will be reoriented towards teaching this, and it will produce basically a civil war or drive Christianity underground. All right, here is another clip on that. Faith leaders warning the Supreme Court of the United States, don't cross that line. All right, so that's the basic position. Now, you've heard the arguments for, gay marriage, that everyone has a right to be married, and that we need to take basically a libertarian view of personal decisions, and on the alternative that, we're not supposed to mix in to our politics, religion. We're not supposed to poison the political system with religious views, but everybody's opinion comes from somewhere. Some people are informed on what they believe from religion, others aren't. The idea that you're going to get rid of all of the influence of religious opinion on the government is absurd. It's not something that you would want anyway. I mean, you wouldn't want to get rid of the law against murder because, people didn't believe in the, Ten Commandments. But anyway, here is another little clip, Supreme Court arguments underway in the gay marriage case. And this is from a few days ago, Fox News. And so in that clip, they're saying that it's not really clear from these things. Now, here's a little more from Bloomberg, what the justices had to say on gay marriage. All right, so that was what happened in that debate. It's kind of interesting to hear the voices of these justices. We'll take a break here. We're going to come back and talk about the Shalem Colony and some science stuff that you'll find interesting about the expanding universe. Be right back, Kelly O'Connell, 659 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Good morning. It's 7:06 on AM Las Cruces, and Kelly here, 523-1450 to call in. I got into a little bit of this story that was mentioned by Rob on this colony that was established here that I'm embarrassed to admit I'd never even heard of, a colony that was very early in the Mesilla Valley. It was an attempt at a commune, a socialist colony, whatever you want to describe it as, and it kind of fell by the wayside, as all socialist colonies do. But it's a pretty interesting story. And there's a great article on this in the Sun News, and this is by Christopher Schertz, 2011, Northwest, the Shalem Colony, Early New Mexico's Communes, Innovation and Oddness. All right, let me just give you a little background here. I found a clip on it as well by somebody by the name of, I think, Robin Riley. And I don't know, some of you might know Robin Riley, but anyway, what happens is, this is in American history when there is this spiritist movement. There's a lot of people in spiritism, and which would include this belief in automatic writing, like you would sit down with a pen and paper or a typewriter, whatever, and the spirits would move you to write a book. Okay, so a gentleman by the name of John Ballou, kind of like Cat Ballou, but John Ballou Newbrow, was a dentist. In 1880, he wrote a book, and it was called OASP. I don't know if that's pronunciation, OAHSPE. He said it was the result of automatic writing. The book is twice as long as the Book of Mormon. And he said that he was put into a trance by spirits and on a very early typewriter, and possibly the very first book ever written on the typewriter. He typed this thing out, and the spirits were prodding him to type, and it's about 4/5 the size of the King James Bible. And so it is, I guess you would call it New Age, somewhat New Age. They said it was similar to Scientology a little bit, I guess. And the book was published in 1882. It was New Revelations. Kind of claiming that, I guess, the same people that, or the same spirits that helped produce the Bible had helped produce this. From the, quote, ambassadors of the angel hosts of heaven prepared and revealed unto man in the name of Jehovah, J-E-H-O-V-I-H. And it is, the title page said this: a new Bible in the words of Jehovah and his angel ambassadors, a sacred history of the dominions of the higher and lower heavens on the earth for the past 24,000 years, together with a synopsis of the cosmogony of the universe, the creation of planets, the creation of man, the unseen worlds, the labor and glory of gods and goddesses in the Aetherian heavens, and the new commandments of Jehovah to man of the present day. And so Jehovah, the great spirit, or Mazda, Ego Quim, Ago Quim, Elohi, the I Am, Jehovah, and other names are used throughout OSB as the name of the creator. Anyway, so what does this have to do with Mesilla Valley? All right, well, this same guy came in to make a colony here. the colony was supposed to put his ideas into practice from his Bible, his OSP, and they were going to get a bunch of orphans and take them from other cities and bring them here to raise them. All right, so here's a little clip from this on Robin, from Robin Riley, The People of Mesilla Valley. All right, so just a little bit about the early area. Now, the Salem colony didn't last that long, but it's got a pretty interesting background, and let us take a break and go into that just a little bit more, and I'll tell you some more information on John Ballou Newbrow when we come back. This is the guy that started, that wrote the Bible of the Salem colony, our own socialist undertaking or communal undertaking, and then he helped fund it until it fell apart a few years later. Kelly O'Connell, 714-715, Amos Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We're talking about the history of this area and this very weird colony called Salem. We'll be right back. Kelly, 719. All right, talking about Salem. Salem was started, a local commune was started by this gentleman. It's started by a couple of people. The outline of it came from OSP. It was a Bible written by one guy under the influence of spirits for 50 weeks, typing every day. And that is John Ballou Newbrow. Now, they also had funding from a Boston millionaire, Andrew Howland. And so they set up camp here. Now, what was in Salem colony? First, it was a vision for a strictly vegetarian diet within a communal agrarian setting, and also to gather orphans from America's biggest cities. And it was one of the first farms in New Mexico to use steam-powered pumps and plows. But the people who came to live here to find paradise reported after they had left that they were that it was misrepresented to them, and that the colony's leader, John Ballou Newbrow, who was a 57-year-old former dentist and spiritualist, was a despot. He was 6 feet 4 inches, reddish curly hair, beautiful eyes. He was messianic in his approach. He attracted some and repelled others. He prophesied that basically there would eventually be schools and vast farm fields that would be established here, and all of the property would be held in common. Now, this is when this area was still mostly desert. In 1886, after living in the colony for a while, some of the people who were in there said that this gentleman, Newbrow, ran Salem Colony like a despot. The property was not held in common. And a group called the Rio Grande Republicans went after him, saying, quote, "They are a set of cranks and have expended money on injudicious experiments, devoting more attention to a fanatical creed invented by Newbrow, the founder, than to farming." And at the peak, they had about four dozen, almost 50 people living here. And but it never really came to what it was supposed to be, and so it ended up falling apart. I've got a little clip here on, and this is Robin Riley has put together a film. He put it in the White Sands Film Festival. Here is these are clips from this film on this called Utopia on the Rio Grande. And I'm going to have to get a hold of this gentleman and get him into the studio so we can have a discussion about this. But here's a clip called This Is It. John Newbrow explores area in the West to build his utopian colony. All right, so this is this Shalem colony. Now, they've got their 1,400 acres and began to organize it and prepare it for farming. This gentleman that comes here and gets off on the train and puts on a blindfold and begins to stagger around looking for where the spirits are leading him, John B. Newbrow, puts together this group of faithists, and what ultimately caused this colony to collapse was the death of this guy. So they were looking for a peace colony for the perfection of man, and all of these utopian schemes seek the same thing, to create paradise on earth. There is no paradise in heaven. Paradise has got to be established on earth, and it is always seems to lead to the same. The same type of outcome is that it's supposed to be communal decisions, but one person ends up making the decisions or running everything, and it becomes a tyranny, and it is an inefficient misuse of resources, etc. Here's the mother of Shalem, Frances Newbow. The woman who managed the daily life at the colony. All right, so I've got one more clip for you here from this, and this is the Michaela Nunez, born March. Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I'll skip this particular thing. Anyway, if you want to go to utopiaontherio.com, that's where the information about this is, but it's pretty fascinating. Now, let me play just a little bit of the opening of this book, Osby, to give you a feel for it, the start of it. All right, that's the first 2 minutes of this reading this book, but you get a feel for it. It's got a sense of a little touch of Genesis there, and it's also got, you listen to it, it almost sounds like evolution. So this guy has mixed in some of Darwin's ideas into this thing too, and then all right, so, and that was the foundation for this colony, and then when this guy died, the colony ended. So I'm going to get a hold of Robin Riley if I can and see if we can bring him on the show and have a more in-depth conversation about this. But anyway, that is Communism on the Rio Grande, Socialism in Mesilla Valley. Pretty interesting, huh? All right, let's take a little break here. 523-1450 to call in, and we're going to shift gears and talk a little bit about the universe and some of the things that have come out recently, including the difference between the visible and the invisible, or the seen and beyond view universe. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 on AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. We'll be right back at 7:30 on the button. Getting into just a little bit of science here, and the sciences on cosmology, the universe, everything. All right. From Technology Review, I've got an article, pretty interesting, a couple of years old, about 4 years old, titled, Cosmos at least 250 times bigger than visible universe, okay? So we have all of this stuff out in the universe that we can see, the stars, the Milky Way, the other things, you know, the other heavenly formations that we can see and that we've named. And this all came into, this bigness of the universe came into our understanding about 100 years ago when Hubble did his experiments and noticed that there were stars that were red, or you know, some the different colors, and the red stars or the more red ones, he argued or theorized that these things were farther away. The more red they got, the farther away they were, the older they were. So that was the beginning. Now that we've sent out the Hubble Space Telescope to take pictures, and we've sent other items out into space, other pieces of technology, ships and telescopes, and we have other types of, we have telescopes that don't really use glass lenses or photography. They would pick up on infrared, that they would go through the entire spectrum of energy and use that to study the universe. So then we began to understand more and more how truly gigantic the universe is, to the point where it's incomprehensible. It's so large. So this, according to this article, the universe is about 14 billion years old. And from that, it's easy to conclude that we can't see things more than 14 billion light years away. Although they say that's not correct, because the universe is expanding, and the most distant visible things are much farther away. Photons in the cosmic microwave background have traveled 45 billion light years to get here, making the visible universe about 90 billion light years across. Now, how much bigger could it get? Well, about 250 times bigger than that, believe it or not. And based on various measures, now here I've got a little clip explaining how big the universe is. And this is from Minute Physics. All right, so that might be a little bit hard to follow, but there's an area that we can see around us. No matter how strong our telescopes are, we can only see so far to the edge of this universe that we're in, or to the edge of the visible universe. The universe that is beyond that is remarkably larger. And I've got another clip here from the Guardian, UK Guardian, on this same topic. Trying to fathom how much bigger the universe as a whole is than the visible universe, which is absolutely gigantic. Well, that's about halfway through this clip. You can find that clip, how big is the universe compared with a grain of sand. So anyway, the universe is absolutely gigantic. Now, this has kind of raised a couple of issues. This book that I'm reading right now, which I've got on my Kindle, and let me just get the title of it for you in case you're interested in it. The Goldilocks Enigma, Why is the Universe? Let's see if I can get back to the front page of this puppy. It's by Paul Davies. It's too small for me to read on this stupid thing, but why is the universe the way it is, basically? If you get down to it, and here's another article that I want to throw in, because I, even watching this stuff and seeing the pictures and listening to these people, my eyes kind of glaze over, and you listening to this, you might find it a little bit hard to follow. We're trying to figure out different ways to measure the size of the universe through the technology that we have, which also includes supercomputers and doing mathematical, studies of math of the size of it. We understand that there are a couple of things out there. Number one, it's vast. Number two, it's so vast that it goes beyond how far we can see. Number three, there's something called dark matter, which is an unseeable matter that we can measure through our measure. We can understand it through measurements and mathematics and stuff. And then there is the area of the universe that goes beyond what we could see. If we moved farther in one direction, we could see farther into the visible. What part of the universe would become visible to us? So there's these different ideas out there. But if what we have seen, what we can see, about 90 billion light years across, is 1/250th of the size of the universe itself. It's just incomprehensible. Now, there is an issue out there. How did life erupt here where we're at? Was it through chance, Darwinism? Was it through God? Well, the idea behind the Goldilocks enigma is that there's no explanation from people who are not believers, you almost have to have religious faith to say this universe that we're in is the result of, you know, we're here because of not because of random chance. Now there's many reasons that people will tell you that it can't be by chance, because there's hundreds of things that if you changed even one of them, life would disappear or wouldn't have arisen. Here's an article that just came out not too long ago, last December. Earth has its own Star Trek-like force field, study suggests. And so there is some sort of a force field-like thing that comes out of the Van Allen radiation belt that stops electrons from coming in and destroying things on the earth. Now, this is just one of hundreds and hundreds. So this is where this thing called the, what they call the multiverse, the argument behind it is, we know, and I think from a lot of scientific perspective, we know that we're here as a result of random chance. The universe is self-generating. Somehow it's a phenomenon that doesn't need any outside forces to create it. It's a static state. And the result of that is, because we're in this universe now that is friendly to life, and that had to have happened by accident, and it couldn't, there were too many coincidences that are in line with life. Therefore, you have to have an infinite number of universes. That's where the multiverse theory comes from. Anyway, hopefully this is not getting too deep to follow, but I like I say, for myself, it makes my head swim. Let's take a break here at 6:50, Kelly O'Connell Show. And be right back. It is Kelly here, and just kind of talking about something that's a little bit, it's hard to talk about, not because it really doesn't have anything to do with how smart you are or even whether you have a screen in front of you, because if you have a screen in front of you and you're watching a clip from YouTube or TV or whatever, you're watching this stuff, it does make it maybe a little bit easier to comprehend, but I think that the difficult thing is that it's just hard to fathom how big the universe is, and it makes your head swim. And I mean, it's so big that if it were 1/100th the size of the Earth as it is now, it would still be so gigantic that it couldn't really be fat. You see what I'm saying? It's just, the size is so, it's just unbelievable. So I've got a little clip here. The Goldilocks universe, or the fine-tuned universe, is where they say that it's the story that has to be explained by science, is why is everything perfect for life? All right, so it's a little bit hard to follow too. It is just hard to really get into this stuff. Here's Paul Davis, the guy that wrote the book that I'm reading right now, Fine-Tuned Universe. All right, so that's Paul Davies. His books are interesting. They're easy to read, and he's pretty approachable in terms of his writing style, and he's putting out there a lot of he's written a lot of books that kind of allow the non-scientists to understand some of the conversations and debates that are happening in science. And the main one right now that I'm looking at is whether the universe was created or an accident. It seems too good to be true to be an accident with one universe, so they say there's an infinite number, but that seems to create more problems than it solves. Anyway, those people of faith will stick to the idea that God said, let there be light, et cetera. Thanks for listening in, and I hope you have a great weekend. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, and I'll see you back on Monday.